This is Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr., a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
And I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut to It.
Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get down to it. Cut to it.
We ask the questions you always want to know, but no one ever asks.
Let's cut to it.
I should know it's on.
You ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know.
I should know it's on.
It's on.
Say what?
I don't think I've ever had a grit.
A grit?
I don't think so. I really don't.
It doesn't come singular. A grit? Another episode of Cut to It. Steve, what's up, bro?
Hey, how you doing, brother?
Man, I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Backstage, what's up, man?
Oh, man, I'm hanging in there. How about y'all?
Not too bad.
Doing well. Always a pleasure to have you here.
Well, he's here every week, though.
It's always a pleasure.
Okay, just making sure people know.
I'm glad.
I wouldn't say it was 1 week. It's like, man, you suck.
You always got to add value. So if I'm adding value, I'm good.
There you go. There you go. Man, we were having a conversation the other day around, what was it, stadiums?
Yeah. So just the other day, Steve and I were riding around going to get something to eat, and something was on ESPN, and they were talking about stadiums, and might have been about the Eagles, the old vet where they had, you know, the jail underneath
it. Yeah, yeah,
And it got me thinking. I looked over at my guy. I said, hey, you know, I always hear about these things. I said, what did you think about it when you were there? Did you know, when everybody got to the stadium or the field, did you go look at it? And, you know, your response was, like, super interesting to me. So that's kind of why I was talking with G. We just, you know, just, mm-hmm. you know, like, how different it is at a stadium or a dome or an arena as a player versus as
seeing
a media
it.
Personnel.
As a player, I did not get to see as much of the inside of the stadium because you went in as the opponent, you went to your locker, mm-hmm. you went into your locker, a vision locker room, you got dressed, you did whatever in training room, blah, blah, blah. You come out, you go to the field.
So you're not really experiencing not what everyone really, else talks about when you think about
yes.
Lambo or Soldier
yep.
Field or this that, old school Candlestick, you know, yep. all those kind of stadiums.
So I've been at Lambeau a number of times as a player, but I've only been at Lambeau one time as an analyst. Really cool. As a player, you fly into Appleton.
Where?
You're right.
Appleton. Apple, T-O-N.
Wisconsin.
Appleton, Wisconsin. Back in 2008, 2007, whatever year. They used to Piggly Wiggly. You stayed at the same hotel. It was very much not very big. Now, they got a dang Top Golf next wow. to the stadium.
Wow. Right? That says a lot.
Really cool. Yeah. However, also, too, when you go into the stadium, it used to just be in like this neighborhood. As a player, Lambeau has always been Lambeau where it's in this neighborhood. This big old stadium, and right across the street from the big old stadium, you can see a family who literally are, you can park on their lawn for $40, $60.
Hey, neighbors.
Right. And it's just so iconic. It's just awesome. Uh-huh. But as an analyst, it's remarkable. Lambeau still has the original foundation, the brick. I believe that was like 1937. That's still in there, and they just have a strip, but it's only on the side of the Packers. Mm. You don't see it as a visitor. So I've seen certain parts that have suites now. They've added more and more to it, but it's just remarkable. Lambeau Field is Lambeau. It's iconic. It's super special. It's just a place where if you're a fan. And you daydream that night about playing the NFL in Lambeau, it'll be more than what you could have ever dreamed about. Minnesota Vikings.
Okay.
It's
newer crazy. Stadium, but just being able to just how
it's
set
crazy.
Up.
Crazy.
Okay.
So just unbelievable. Mm. Unbelievable. Dallas is the same
yeah.
way. You
yeah.
know, AT&T Stadium. It's, you know, it is a great stadium on steroids.
Yeah. Yeah,
right. I actually did a commercial in Dallas Stadium before it was actually opened up when they were still kind of doing it. And I got to see how large the visiting locker rooms are. One stadium that was just trash. San Diego Chargers there when they were the Chargers. Qualcomm.
Yeah.
Gosh, in terrible. San Diego. That place was a dump.
Why? What made it a dump?
They didn't take care of it. And, you know, for whatever reason, we played down there. And my wife told me they were in a suite and they had a clogged toilet in one of the suites. Yellow water was running down the windows of the suite.
Yikes.
Like stuff like that.
Mm. Man.
Yeah.
You know, that's interesting is the word I'll go with.
Yes, me too.
But, you know, as you sit back as a fan or on the outside looking in, and I know you're when you're playing, you're always, you know, getting ready for the game and getting hype.
You don't get to see those things.
Were there other stadiums? Could you, like, and I go back to Lambeau, just because I think everyone listens to this show, do you know when you're there? And why I say that is when you walk in and you're like, this is it. And you said, like you said, it's unbelievable. It's more than you can imagine. Mm-hmm. But is there a presence there? Is there that vibe of old school, you know, running football and just, you know, Lombardi, Bart
Frozen
Starr,
Tundra.
Yeah, the Tundra, all that.
I think depends on the team, you know, how good the team is doing, depends on the time of year. I mean, if you're there playing in September, it doesn't feel the same the way it's going to look in November, December when it's cold. Yeah. It isn't the same. I remember playing when I was with the Baltimore Ravens. We were playing, I think in the division round, we were playing New England Patriots, and they went on to win the Super Bowl. In that playoff game, none of the fans sat down, and it was like 15 degrees at night.
Yeah.
They stood the whole time. My wife goes, I wish we could have just sit down a little bit, but she couldn't because
you wouldn't have been able to see.
So, like, stuff like that. Pittsburgh, playing that night in Pittsburgh, bananas, especially if you're Baltimore Raven. The disgust and the hate, professional hate, unbelievable. Mm. There's just some places that when you go – Philly, current Philly, old Philly, their fans just make the game what it is.
What would be bucket list that you have yet to experience any sport?
I was supposed to go, and then I broke my arm. And then a good friend I was supposed to go see play tennis. You know, I broke my arm, and he ended up having that world record 15-hour match that John Isner. So I didn't get a chance to go see him play out there, out in London. I can't which one was that? He had that 15-hour match in tennis.
I can't spit anything about you for tennis, bro. I
forgot. I've been Australian Open, so I enjoyed that. That was pretty cool. Saw some players play on center court. Saw Serena win out there. Mm.
Yeah, that's got to rank up there. You saw Serena?
Yeah.
That's got to rank up there.
U.S. Open or tennis down in New York. Been there. Me and Peyton saw John down there. So that was pretty good.
You know, any bucket list for you, Joe?
I mean, for me, just going from a golf perspective, you know, I kind of think of the same thing. Just going to the Masters would be
that's on mine.
Cool just to walk those hallowed grounds and go and see that. And another one was pretty cool, and this might lean more towards the event than the venue, but like going to an OU Texas college football game just to see how they
crowd.
Get after it down there, just to sit back and watch, and that would be a great experience.
Mm. And that's mine too, college, being a local guy in North Carolina. I've been, of course, to Dean Smith Center, never had a chance to go see UNC Duke. So that's what I'd love to do. That's my bucket list. Is
you'd be surprised of the Duke facility.
Y'all, I've been to Duke once. Haven't been again. I'm just saying, like the rivalry.
I've watched him play. I went to it. Very.
It's tiny.
Super.
it's tiny.
But then they have. But everything is old school.
Mm-hmm.
Even the popcorn maker's old school.
Yep.
Agnes, that's serving the popcorn.
Agnes.
She about 100 years old. I've really grown and love and respect how much of the workers and how much detail work it really takes to run a place on game day.
Right.
Hours and hours before. Sometimes 15, 16 hours before the game has started, people have busted their chops, busted their butt, just so that when those people walk through two and a half, three hours before the game, it's been so much done for the players, but more for the fans and the experience that you receive. You never know what has happened. You don't know how dirty or how clean those seats were prior to you getting there. And someone has to clean that seat. Someone has to clean that stall. Someone has to clean and refill all of those napkin holders.
In basketball, they got to pull up the court. God forbid, if it's a hockey team in the same facility, I've seen where you had to go overnight. Someone, a crew works all night, take up the basketball floor, bring the ice back out. It's a huge operation.
Mm.
I know one stadium they should have done a better job at, and that's Qualcomm in San Diego.
That's true. Man, who we got?
Coming up on the Cut to It podcast, we've got Lorenzo Neal, a four-time Pro Bowler, an All-Pro, a member of the 2000s NFL All-Decade team, but more importantly, just a fountain of wisdom. Lorenzo Neal on the Cut to It podcast. Our first segment is called Get Iced Up. Smitty, go ahead and give him the first question.
All right, you ready?
Let's roll.
Okay. The strangest thing you've ever eaten, and where were you?
Oh, the strangest thing that I've ever eaten. Man, I think it was a grasshopper. I was my buddy Joey Jordan. We were in Lemoore. I'm a country boy, you know, from from the big L town, Lemoore. We didn't have a stoplight growing up. We didn't have a McDonald's growing up, believe it or not. Only had a couple stops, didn't even have stoplights. So we're country kids. So, he pulled off the legs of the grasshopper and we wanted to see if we could eat it. So ate a grasshopper. So it was still moving around and wiggling in your mouth. So a grasshopper and then I don't know if you guys heard of saltgrass. Go look up saltgrass. I live out in Lemoore too. And a lot of Native American Indians in Lemoore. And the Indians, they give saltgrass. So they eat saltgrass. It's really salty, but it's like supposed to be like cow poop. They poop on it and makes it grass. So look up saltgrass. Pretty interesting. So those are probably the two things that I've eaten that's probably I wouldn't probably do it again.
I don't need to look it up because you just there's two infractions here. Okay. First infraction is your ass ain't Native American.
Yeah. I'm Choctaw. My grandmother, her mom was full-blooded Indian. In Oklahoma, I'm from Fort Worth, Oklahoma as well. I'm not from my ancestors and stuff. And so back in the day, the Native Americans and blacks and the slaves, they were always hooking up. So believe it or not, a lot of blacks and Indians were married and together. So I got my Native American card.
X-curl does not make you Native American.
We quit to say that. You know, my hair is good. I got Indian in my family. Yeah.
I got high cheekbones, boy. I like to put my shoes on. Hey, I run a lot barefooted. I knew that they used to call me running foot, but I love to run barefoot.
Okay. And then the second infraction is you said saltgrass is what cow manure, cow poop is on. And basically when it dries up, it's salty grass that had cow feces.
I think it may have been. I don't know.
The next time I'm back home and we hanging out and you say, you know, can I have a swig?
You ain't kiss.
I said, swig. If you say, hey, how is that?
We don't know what a swig is.
Salt grass. Your salt grass mouth. All right.
Hey, so we ain't gonna. I'm gonna leave it alone because I ain't gonna mention what y'all boys been eating out there. I know what y'all eat. Whoa. I'm gonna leave it alone. Let's pray. Lord, the God is good.
Hey, what's the one thing you cannot leave home without?
Oh, I cannot leave home without my wallet or my phone or a couple bucks in my pocket.
Okay.
Gotta have a couple dollars.
Yeah.
Got to. Don't have dollars, don't have cents.
Hey, that's a generational thing because, you know, I'm old school and I have a money clip.
Mm-hmm. You gotta have it, right, bro?
Gotta have cash. Yeah. Now, my kids and a wife, whenever they need cash,
I know who to go to.
Hey, Dad, you know, your money clip is right on don't touch that money. You can ask me,
right?
But don't touch it. So I know that's a generational thing. A lot of the young pucks,
the whippersnappers.
They, you know, hey, Venmo me the money.
Oh, boys, my son's at Purdue, already graduate engineer, still playing his fifth year senior, balling out, playing pretty good. Big fella got some feet, can dance, and he's got a chance to play on Sunday.
So he got his mama's jeans. That's good. That's good.
Oh, man, stop playing. Boy, y'all play too much. I'm gone. I'm getting off the show. And that's like a call me all the time. He'll talk to his mama all the time. Oh, mama, come stay. Anytime you call me, it's just for money. I'm like, why are you calling me? Say, we'll have a, hey, Dad, good morning. How you doing? Just want to call, check in with you. I'm just start talking. And before we get to the end, I said, how much money you need?
Right.
No, Dad. Yeah, exactly.
That's how it go.
Y'all know how that go.
Yep. If you could change your name, what would you change it to?
I would change it to Denzel.
What's with the Denzel?
Don't even ask.
Yeah, we move right along.
All right. So are
Smitty
you
somehow think that Denzel would play him in the movie about his life? So
I didn't say think. You asked me if there was a movie about me.
And that's the answer that you gave.
Why am I gonna pick some bum? Why can I shoot for the stars?
I mean,
okay.
Why do I want some dude for cheap? I ain't paying for it. I'm not having Denzel. Why do I want my cousin Dion, who I love? I don't want that playing me. I want Denzel.
I'm with you.
Yeah. Hey,
go for it.
Black on black crime, G.
What crime did I just commit?
You killed me.
Wow.
So are you a tea or coffee person?
Wow. I used to be more of a tea, but you get older, I think I switch more to coffee. But I do enjoy both of them. But to me, coffee is easier. And so I'll go with coffee.
Yeah. I like a little cup of tea here and there, man. Some Earl Grey.
A little hot tea.
I used to do it with my bourbon. I don't drink anymore. I'm about 5 years in. But always some good tea and make a hot toddy with a little Jack in it or a little gin. Throw some lemon in with the honey.
Now we talking.
I was trying to be rich and just have some.
Hush all got here. Oh,
so you stick your pinky out too while you at it?
I said, maybe watch a show on Netflix or Hulu.
I was gonna flex while you talking about tea.
That's not something you just randomly do. Let me have some tea. Like, you gotta be in a mood.
Okay.
Like some house slippers on.
Robe.
No, just basketball shorts.
Turtleneck.
I'm still hood. So I'm gonna have white beater on.
You look like you wear a turtleneck and drink your tea.
Wow. Turtleneck and drinking hot tea and with some bourbon. That kicked my butt right
here.
Wow.
So let me paint the picture. I'll be in some basketball shorts, a tank top, some house shoes on. And yes, I'm in a house.
What kind of house shoes? They like the old dog slippers from like Menace to Society or which ones?
They're the old dogs. They the old dog upgraded.
They got the memory foam in them. You fancy.
Like Uggs got the little fuzz in the inside.
Okay, yeah.
Because my crusty feet need to stay warm. Anyway.
He asked about all that.
I like a little tea sometimes. All right, let's move on. We have digressed, but it is interesting.
It's all right.
And love having you on. This is my big dog, man. I met Zoe so many years ago, and we've kept this great bond, this great relationship. Mm-hmm. I've been on his radio show a number of times back in California, but I've never had the privilege to having, obviously, our show cut to it, where I get to talk to, and that's one of the things I'm really enjoying, getting to talk to what I call the older heads, the men and the women that have really instilled some things in me. And as we go down this trail, you'll hear some things, and I got a love on him that I've stolen a few things that he said and also instilled in me. I'll give credit to now he's on my podcast. Now, when I'm on TV or talking to other radio, I don't give him credit, and I won't, because I want people to think I'm super duper smart. Right. So, we'll get into that. So, Lorenzo O'Neal, what was your favorite team growing up? Any sport?
Yeah, you know what's crazy? It's interesting, and this is not just me reaching. This is really true. I believe it or not, I was a San Diego Charger fan because of Chuck Muncy, Kellen Winslow, Charlie Joyner, love Dan Fouts, Wes Chandler, James Brooks. I love that team. Eric, you know, Don Coryell was the coach. Something about watching, you know, old 46, old Chuck Muncy take it with the one crossbar across the face. Chuck Muncy was a beast. Watching him play and Kellen Winslow, what he was at the tight end position, that offense, and had Charlie Joyner, Wes Chandler. Watching those guys play, man, was just like, oh my God. And at a young age, I became a Charger fan. I had two guys live down the street from us. They were like next door neighbors. Not and next door neighbors, you got to realize that's probably a country mile because, you know, you have to walk because it's in country. No one, we had land and Dave and Joey, and they were the Steelers and Dallas Cowboys, but I was always the Chargers, and they weren't that good, but they would always compete. Mm. And so just I was a Charger fan growing up. Basketball, you know, you love the Lakers. You love what those guys were doing, you know, watching those good old rivals between them and Boston. You know, boxing, loved. I was a boxing connoisseur. Loved Ali, caught a little bit of him. Larry Holmes, was watching him, loved him. Sugar Ray Leonard, Wilbur Benitez, all those guys in that era, man, was just those guys, Hearns, Hagner, they got it done. But watching Sugar Ray, man, he was just so sweet. So Ali and Larry Holmes don't get the credit he deserves. Yeah. Love to watch those guys. Love to watch those guys fight. So I love sports. It something was ingrained in me.
We have to take a break. And more than anything, we got to pay some bills.
Mm-hmm. Need that check.
I love Cut To It. And I love it even more when you download us and subscribe.
And you can follow us on social media too, Smitty.
Where at?
That's at Cut To It on Instagram.
What about Twitter?
At Cut To It.
Facebook?
Cut To It featuring Steve Smith Sr.
What about online?
And you can follow us at cuttoitpodcast.com where you can buy merch and you can subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
I got all my answers I got all my questions answered.
That's what I'm here for, brother. CutToItPodcast.com.
A guy you blocked for, too, gave us a great story when we asked this. Is where you from in a place you call your hometown?
The big L town, Lemoore, California, where I'm from. So if you look at California, you guys know how long it is. You know, one of the longest states to travel to. California, we're in the Central Valley. So we're dead smack in the middle. We're 300 miles south going down to L.A., mm-hmm. We're 300 miles north going up to the Bay, San Francisco. So we're in the middle. And so Fresno, Bakersfield, Visalia, Bakersfield, all those towns, those little towns, by the way, related to Tommy Smith, member of the 64 Olympics up there. Yeah. When so he's from Lemoore. Steve Perry, just a small town boy living in a lonely world. He's, James, your journey. He's Lemoore too, Steve Perry. So small town. But it's just a country, a lot of ag farmland around, but we are centrally in the Central Valley. So that's why they call it the Central Valley. We're the raising capital of the world. We produce over $75 billion a year in ag and in food. We feed the majority of the world. Central Valley is so rich in farmland. So that's where it's at. So 300 miles south, you go to L.A. 300 miles north, you go to San Francisco. So we're dead smack in the middle.
Growing up there, how did that shape your view on the world today?
Well, I think that, you were blind a little bit, but you were also, it made you see things differently because you're a young man growing up in a town like that, lots of Portuguese, majority Portuguese and white, and, blacks were kind of not necessarily majority. A lot of the blacks came from, the South and moved to Lemoore, the Central Valley, because in the 60s and 50s, a lot of the people left, far as getting out of the Texas and stuff. So a lot of them came out to California. My dad and my grandmother was named Viola, and Oliver was my grandfather. And they came from Texas on the back of a truck. My dad and his six brothers and my Aunt Bernice. And so it was a guy, Cunny Man, they called him Cunny Man, and he would drive people and families out to California. And they took them out to the Island District. And out in the Island District, it was sort of like a not a plantation, but a community.
Almost like
yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Where all the blacks lived on the land, and they shared, and they worked on different farms and chopped cotton, picked cotton. And everyone says chop cotton. You don't chop cotton. What you do is you chop the weed. So I grew up, and we had 50 acres, and we still have it now. I'm developing that now, residential. But so I had to chop cotton growing up. So you chop the weeds that are around the cotton. So you got to get a hoe, and you go down the rows, and you hoe the weeds from around the cotton. So for it won't strangle the cotton for it to grow. So those are some of the things. And then my grandparents, my dad, my mom, we had to pick cotton. So you pick the cotton, you make sure pick it, and the sacks that you pick, you weighed them, and you got paid for that. I didn't pick cotton, but you know, my thing was, you know, I did chop, you know, the weeds from around it, but we had a cotton picker, so we didn't have to do that with my grandparents or what my mom and dad had to do. So those kind of things kind of molded me, and kind of, you ask, you know, what did it bring for me? It taught me how to work. It taught me about hard work. I still go out and cut grass. I have rental properties in Lemoore. I got a hammer and nail, like in sheetrock. I try to tell my kids, I said, look, when dad's gone, that's why I try to get you guys to come out here and work, because you need to know, well, dad, we can hire someone. I said, yeah, but if you got a room and you got a, you know, 10 by 10 by 10 room, you know, that's four. How many, you know, where's the stud? You got your two by fours every 16 or every 12 inches. So I can tell you, even though you don't have to be going out and doing the work, but at least I want you guys to know how many two by fours you need to buy. So if you learn that stuff, now no one can't beat you. So those are the certain things that really, really, that I gravitated toward, that kind of, you know, still keep me and keeps me molded who I am. My grandmother, like I said, she was 97 when she died. And I remember my senior year, I was the league player of the year. I was the central section player of the year. I was the Valley player, the athlete of the year. And I was Northern California athlete of the year. And I was California Athlete of the Year. Janet Evans says, Lorenzo's the king and Janet's the queen. Janet Evans, who won the Olympics. And I beat out Michael Kim, who was a tennis player, for Athlete of the Year. Curtis Conway, all the greats. And I remember sitting with my grandmother, and she said, come here, boy. She said, sit down. I said, oh, grandma. She's like, she was wanting to sit and talk to me. She had an old beat up station wagon. I said, don't worry, I'm not going to give you the station wagon. I said, oh, thank God. And so she sat down. You know what, son? She goes, you can do all those things. She goes, you know what? All these athletes, all these, you know, accolades you're getting, and people are bragging about you. She said, but let me tell you something. She said, I came from Fort Worth, Texas. I had your own, I was picking cotton. As she said, she was a foreman over 20 people. That she was, you know, she was picking cotton, but she was foreman over 20 people. She was making sure they picked and did the things that they needed to do. She said, I was pregnant with your Uncle Joe. I went into labor on Wednesday. I went worked. Thursday, I had your uncle. Friday, I went back to work. And I said, Grandma, why don't you just take the weekend off? You're already going to be off for the weekend. And you just could have took Friday and then been off and go back Monday. She said, son, she goes, I'll tell you this. Never take a vacation when the boss is around. I said, why not? She said, they'll realize how much they don't need you. And at that time, I really didn't know. I was a senior in high school. But, you know, all those times, and she even got to see me play in the pros. She lived a great life. But all that time, I didn't know until, you know, I got in college and then high school, the pros. She was telling me, son, you could be as good, you could be the best, but if you take a vacation when the boss is around, they'll realize they don't need you. Someone else is going to take your prize. Someone else is just as hungry. Someone else wants to be that supervisor. Someone else wants to be that supervisor over 20. Someone else wants to be that starting fullback. Someone else wants your job. So never take a vacation when the boss is around, because they'll realize how much they don't need you. And those are the things that I still tell my kids. Those are the things that I tell people when I go out and talk to them. Those are so important for not just in sports, but just in life in general.
It's funny is when hearing you say all of this with the same enthusiasm as how you taught a lot of players while you were on teams with the Cincinnati Bengals, with the obviously on that Hall of Fame career with LaDainian Tomlinson, and just what you did and meeting a guy named Steve Smith before he became senior at the Pro Bowl. Just all of that stuff that you've taught so many players that have so many high admirations for you.
Man, I appreciate it. My thing, Steve, and you know it, man, you were that guy that everyone in the league, they knew. Whether, you know, watching you play and the attitude in which you went about it, and you demanded respect. And it wasn't, you didn't have to talk about it. They just knew Steve was going to be playing. I don't care. They knew that they were going to go into the meeting. They don't care how big, how small, whatever. They knew that they had the game plan for you. You can't teach that. That's something that you have inside you. That's something that's been instilled. That's just your heart. That's just your determination. No size or nothing determines who you are. That doesn't define you. Steve is, we're talking about me, and I know me and you, that's why we have a kindred spirit. We love each other, love each other's family. But the biggest thing, man, is like, it doesn't matter. It can be the biggest dude in the world. Steve, you ain't backing down. Even if they whooped your ass, that's just not who you are. No, I'm being, you know that, bro. That's just, but a lot of people, we pit bulls, and a lot of people don't have that. They don't have that it factor. It's you gotta kill this. And that's what makes, that's the difference between good and great. Yeah. That's the difference that separated you. And that's the difference that separated you, that you can wait. Okay, you, no way, not on my watch. No way. You might beat me, you might win the game, but you ain't beating Steve. That's just how you're built. You wasn't beating you. You might win the team, your team might have lost, your team might have struggled. But something inside of you that you're gonna say, I'm whooping your ass today. You guys might win, but I'm gonna tell you right now, y'all gonna know that I'm here. You would block, you would hit guys, you would attack. It doesn't matter what your job was. That's what made you great, bro. That's what made you great.
I don't know what to say.
I was gonna say, how do you feel hearing that from Lorenzo?
It's hard to digest, to be honest.
Why?
It allows you. I believe one of the reasons why I have such a hard time hearing compliments, especially from people I admire or I respect or I really value, including you and a lot of, people on our production team that we work with, is because it allows me to take my guard down. Mm-hmm. And I don't like taking my guard down, because if I take my guard down, the fear of being emotionally hurt, because of, I know, you could physically hurt me and okay, I have a high threshold of pain. Mm-hmm. I've been through some things. Mm-hmm. Emotionally, that's hard to get through.
Yeah.
Right. You've seen people who have dealt with things emotionally as children, and you can talk to someone long enough, you realize, man, their childhood screwed them up. I don't want to be that, right? I think some of my childhood already wounded me.
Sure.
And so that's why it has taken a lot of years to create a smile. For me, for a long time, it was easier to frown, yeah. Because if you keep yourself close guarded, right? If you look like you're unapproachable,
then people won't approach you.
Exactly. And if people don't approach you, you don't have to talk. So it just goes down a whole thing. And so that isolation, right? I for a long time, isolation was where I thrived, right? It's where I felt comfortable. Yeah. So,
And Steve, with that. Even though you were loved, then you find it hard to really submit or to be just, okay, I'm a bear who I am, because you're used to being on this island. Mm-hmm. And people might say they can help you. They might tell you they love you and all those different things, but it's just, it's a place that you just like, you want to believe it. But anytime things happen, if you don't have you,
yeah.
It's
like a mental prison almost.
It's not a mental prison. What's the prison is having a friendship with someone that it isn't really a true friendship. That's right. because then what are you left with? You're left sitting there picking up your own emotional pieces going, see? And you start to digest, or you start to piece together, well, they don't want to really be my friend. You don't say, they aren't my friend, or the relationship wasn't good because they are someone who's wounded or didn't know this or that. It's, well, was it I said this that made them feel this way? Or gotcha. did I do this? And some of it, so you start to figure out, and then you start putting the pieces together. So you're having a conversation with yourself, who ultimately says, I did something wrong. That's why it didn't work out. Right. So if you don't have that, then you're safe. So it's not that prison that, you know, you're feeling safe. It's people who don't run would not get this. There's a place where it's called no man's land, where the slow runners are where they are. Then the fast runners are where they are. If you're stuck in the middle. So if you hang with the slow people,
yeah,
right. Y'all go at the pace that's comfortable for you guys. But if you're a slow person trying to run with a fast pace,
yeah. Got you.
And you can't keep up. Your body.
You're going to run out of gas.
Your mind say, yeah. Your mind's telling you, yeah. But your legs.
Both of y'all in these
your
runs.
Legs are saying no, right? Your legs say, nope, that lactic acid buildup. You start heavy breathing. And so you start to back up. You're in the middle. You're in between the fast people. Yeah. But you're not fast enough to
for
be
the
with
fast
the,
people.
For the 6 minute mile pace.
But you're faster than
a 15 minute mile pace.
Yeah.
So you're stuck in the middle. So you have to maintain, chase, but keep off the slow people.
Yeah.
So you're in the middle and you're dolo. Mm. Mm. And that if you are not prepared and ready to run a marathon by yourself,
come on.
It's a struggle. I mean, it is a struggle. And some people, and I'm not saying this in a negative way, I'm just being honest, I'm throwing it out there. This is where some people commit suicide. This is where some people slit their wrists. This is where some people do not know how
you've been real
deal you with some of what's going on. And there have been times, pretty much a lot of my career, I would say about seven, probably the first 8 or 9 years, man, I was okay with being no man's land. Mm. I preferred being in no man's land because you couldn't tell me I was too slow. And hell, I knew I couldn't run fast. So wow. I was okay with being in no man's land because it gave me a place. I was my judge, jury, and executioner. And I was happy with it because some nights I went to bed, terrible day. And I was okay with it. I'll just go to sleep. Wake up, try again. I trusted no one to really give me anything that was really beneficial.
And that's why Michael Jackson said it best. Stuck in the middle, you got to get over. Can't get under. Hey. Yeah, yeah.
Y'all like Casey and JoJo all of a sudden when I'm singing.
But it's just, you know, and that's where it is. And I think that no man's land is a really good place, but it is a very dangerous place. Without some good counseling, without some good mentorship, without some people that really can love on you, and you also can love on them back. Like Zoe's one of those guys, you know, when the Super Bowl happens, when some big event that requires us former players or current players to get around each other, we see each other. He's one of those guys where I'm okay. If he's a slow runner or a fast-paced runner, I'm okay with sprinting with him because he just lifts you up. He, you see someone, it's like going to an event or you the new employee at a huge corporation and you go into the cafeteria and you see that one person you know and you are beelining to them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm comfortable with them.
Yes,
yeah,
but right. It's not comfortable because I feel safe. It's comfortable because of who he is.
Yes.
Or who she is. And Lorenzo's one of those guys. He texts, you ask, and they say, well, it's for Lorenzo. I've been on the show a few times. And then some days I'm like, it's West Coast.
Right.
I'm like doing the mathematics today, you know. But it's like, it's Lorenzo. Oh, yeah, that big dog. Absolutely. And that's who he is. He oozes the confidence of true friendship.
Wow.
Really, like me and your bond.
Yeah.
You get on my nerves, I get on your nerves. But ultimately, you're one of my closest friends.
Yeah.
And I would lose, if I would lose you in our friendship, it would take me a long time to get over.
Wow, that's strong.
I could buy some friends.
Yeah.
But bro, you're not one of those friends that I don't have the amount of money in my bank account because of what you bring.
Wow.
You know?
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Well, man, that's heavy. But even with that, Lorenzo, how did you land at that place that Steve is describing of being, for lack of a better words, being an OG, being the person that looks out for other people?
You know what? A lot of it's like Steve. We've been hurt. But you still love people. And for me, my dad, he was just my dad. You know, he was a pastor, and you know, he passed like 5 years ago. And he was a good man. Was he perfect? No. And I think that, you know, growing up, sometimes, you know, being a, you know, son of a preacher, you stray. And I'm a lie. I'm a cheat. I'm you name it. I'm that person. And then some. I thought, like Steve talked about, I'm not saying speaking for Steve, but I'll speak for me. Have I thought about, did I get a gun and pull it out and say, I'm gonna commit suicide? No. Have we thought about it? Have we thought about relationships, all those different things? Yes. I think that people that say that they haven't, I think they're lying to themselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We are humans. We are human beings. And those nature and those things that we're talking about, love and respect and knowing who one another is. My dad told me a couple of things, and one of them that just stuck out with me. And he said, son, you know, I got out of college running wild, got in pros, doing my thing. And he said, son, he goes, you got to slow down. And he talked to me in a way. He said, son, he said, look, if you hang out with four people that make a dollar, he said, son, pretty soon there'll be five. And I, wow. And you just, I mean, and it's your timing. So when you're asking, was always good to people? Yeah. Only time I was crazy or an ass is when I was drunk. But as far as just being a good person, I was always a good person. I've done some bad things, and we all have. And that's why, for me, I had to learn how to forgive. Mm-hmm. Forget, you know, because we can do other people, you know, loan money and do things and be there. But then sometimes we do all these things because we're not willing to forgive ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that's what I had recently. And that's why, you know, I depend more on a higher power. And, you know, I get up and try to pray more. I get up and try to do things more. Not that I'm some Bible thumper. You know, I still understand it, because what happens is we have been taught, a lot of Black churches and a lot of Black, that, hey, you got to do this. You got to give more money. You got to tithe. You got to go do this. You got to do this. No. In Exodus, Jesus said, he said, you know, God, he said, I'm the God who brought the children of Israel for 40. I brought you out of Egypt. He says, so serve me. See, so many people in churches, and I think that's why people turn from God. They act like he's a genie in a bottle, and they rub the blunt. Oh, I need a new car. Oh, God, I need a new house. Oh, I need this. I need that. And that's not what he came for. He came to show us just how to live, how to treat people, how to be good to people. That's what, but we don't want to do that, because that's not our nature. Our nature is to lie, to cheat, to steal, to do those things, because that's what he said. Don't give any man no praise. Until recently, learning just to forgive and learning that, hey, look, I'm okay. You know what? God forgave me. Because we go through, we might sin, we might do those things, and we feel so disconnected because of things that we've done in our past, or, you know, we did something, or we felt a certain way, we said some things, we did something we hated, we talked about someone, we did things that we didn't speak like, and it's like, you feel so guilty, but you know what? It's okay. That's why it's only one good, and that's God. We got to stop, you know, we got to stop always holding ourselves and looking at ourselves and judging ourselves. And because you get to that point, sometimes you're just like, man, you'll go down this endless path and the spiral because of the fact you're continuing to hold yourself, and it's never going to be good enough. We'll always search for perfection. And that's why we always pose a chase after Christ, to be more like what he was on this earth. Not like, because man, we get it mixed up. We mess up because we're human. And that's what we got. So I've just tried to learn to let God say, look, you're in control. Whether I lie, whether I steal, whether I do, I'm still going, you know, I don't do it intentionally, but at least to know, man, that God knows and he's forgives and he knows our heart. So that's what's been the biggest thing for me. When you ask how do I get to that place, is I can't do it, man. Trying to hold it up and trying to do all the things for you, you'll go crazy. Trying to take care of everyone, trying to be everything to everybody, you'll go crazy. We're not capable.
How do you deal with self-care then?
You know, for me, I have a guy named Ron, Pastor Ron, who I talk to, but it's not about judgment. Man, Steve, I have lied. I lived a lie. I lived a lie for a lot part of my life that you say you get to a certain age, you're supposed to be married. You get to a certain age, you're supposed to have kids. You're supposed to say, this is what you're supposed to do. You want that trophy wife. You want those things. And nothing that they have done. Nothing. It's not that they're not a great person. It's not that they treat you well. It's not that they're all those things. But if you're a Pepsi and all of a sudden you try to become an orange soda, it doesn't work. You'll never become an orange soda because you're a Pepsi.
Yeah.
So sometimes we do things out of this. Oh, she fine, or this, that, or I'm and that person is not. They did nothing wrong, but because you went into it, because it was something that you felt that you needed to do. It's something you felt. Feeling is the emotion. It's not necessarily the truth.
Hmm.
And sometimes you will hurt kids, you hurt generations because you hurt your wife, you hurt because you won't tell them the truth. You won't let them know who you really are. And you did something, you know, maybe you want to go camping, but you know what? They wouldn't know. It's all about Louie, and it's never been about that. And that's who they've been. They when you got married to them. Hey, I don't want to camp. They would never do some of the things that you, or go fish or do the things that you want to do. And you did it because you felt that I needed to fill a void. And then when you have the things that we have, the disposable income, we can fix the problem just by throwing money at it. It's a temporary solution, but and it's not necessarily the truth.
I think it's about that time. Just take a little breather.
Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get down to it.
Hey, Gerard, where did you get that t-shirt?
You mean this thing?
Oh, yes.
I got it from cuttoitpodcast.com, where we have exclusive merchandise. Shout out to our guys at 704 Shop. But yeah, you can go on, buy you a t-shirt, subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
How did you balance football life, business life, husband, father, and I think this is a pretty heavy one too, son and grandson? Because your mom, dad, and grandma Viola, they didn't let you. You said you strayed, but
oh yeah,
they stayed on you. It sounds like,
man, but
a grown man.
I would go back home and go to church, and my mom and still hit me in the head. I'm 28, 38, slap me in the back of the head in the back of the church. Whoa, so. Man, my dad in high school, I was still getting whippings. So, you know, but at the same sense, though.
How was it? How bad were you, or the fact?
Okay, no,
dad was still whooping you.
No, bro, I didn't drink. I didn't.
You obviously did something because you got your butt whooped.
I didn't smoke. I didn't. No. If my dad said go pick up the yard, and I didn't do it, he would get on it. I mean, so Big Glenn, you got to realize they was from the South. Big Glenn, he had big hands. He was 300. My brother put it this way. Since we just happened I'm parking at the store. I'm supposed to have be rolling, but you know what? This thing got so good to me. I can't shut up. Steve, y'all bringing it out of me today, boy. Y'all bringing it out of me today.
Let me tell you something. This is what we do. This is what we do. I love hearing your story because a lot of times people see the player and they go, oh, you know, I'll get to it right here. I heard you say this a long time ago.
Man, grown man playing a kid's game, getting a king's ransom.
Yes.
Man.
And people see that and they go, well, it's no big deal. You get paid all this money. Mm-hmm. But there's still, whether you got a $100 million contract or you got a $2 contract, that individual still has a heartbeat.
Yeah.
He or she bleeds, he or she breathes, right. And he or she cries.
Yeah. Something led up to that moment and there's still someone behind all that stuff that you see on Sunday afternoons.
Right. And it's to balance it all though, Steve, to be honest, man, to be honest, and I won't because my thing is I got to a point. That's why earlier I told you guys that I had to forgive myself. Now, I didn't have to necessarily forgive, but knowing that God knows that he forgives. So until you can accept that, you'll still lie. You'll still live behind not the truth. You'll do it because you don't want people to look at you and view you a certain way. And we hide behind it. I failed. I failed at it miserably, whether dad beyond me, whether counseling, all those things. I failed at a lot of it. I failed at the husband part of it, failed at the father part of it, failed at the, you know, sometimes the finance part of it, failed at a lot of different things because I became selfish. Now, did I still love? I'm saying, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. So we say we love our parent, we love, and think about it. People say, oh, well, I'm a good person. Have you ever lied? Have you ever looked at a girl in some yoga pants and said, man, and if you have to look, do a second get look or third look, don't you know you look too long? I mean, we can say all those things because it's in our heart. So I had to, you ask me, Steve, the truth because of where I'm at. And I'm not going to sit here and say I don't still lie at times, but even an uncomfortable moment like this, when you ask me, I can tell you I failed. I can tell you I balanced it sometimes at an A. I balanced from an A all the way to an F plus. Mm. So I at times I'm more of an A now, but at sometimes I still, so I get it, but it's a day to day. You play golf. You never go out and play. You can't just go shoot birdie all day long. You never master it. You play football. How many catches have you dropped? But how many have you caught? You can't master it. So, but you still played at such a high level, and you wanted to be perfect. You kept searching for it, but you still failed. That's nothing. That's just like life, man. Steph Curry's one of the best 3-point game shooter we game ever seen, but how many times have he missed the three? But yet and still, that's why I'm doing a show that I'm trying to do, a show that I'm trying to get away from the secular radio. And it's called God, you know, it's God, Family, and Faith, God, Family, and Sports. Because I want to talk about Tom Brady, arguably one of the greatest quarterbacks. But how many interceptions have he thrown? What happened last night? How many game winning drives that he had? But he still felt. But look what family does. Family still lifts him up. Fans still lift him up. Fans still, man, you're the GOAT, still lift you up. But you know what? But why can't we do that for our church brothers? What can we do for our brothers or sisters or kids that are struggling and maybe something going on in their life and they fail or stray or do something? Not that you condone it. Not that you, oh, you're okay. No, but you, why not still show love? I'm at a point in time where now I'm trying to give. I even give more because I want people to know that there's still hope. We can get up. We can shake ourselves. We can continue to try to strive for perfection. Just like in football, and you kept striving for perfection no matter what. Why can't we do that in life? Why can't we do the relationship? Why do we quit? Why do we say, okay, I ain't talking to that person. Okay, I ain't doing that. Oh, no, I'm done. You never did that. We never did that in sports. But yet still, we can do that for individuals, people we love, people we care about. So, man, that's where I'm at, Steve. I failed, brother. I failed during that time. Yeah, I had a great career, but I failed at so many other things.
Wow. Yeah. Lorenzo, our last segment that we'll have in this podcast is called The Deep Three. And it's just three questions that we ask that take us behind you as a football player, goes beyond your jersey. So, Smitty, give him the first Deep Three question.
I really want to know from you, how has playing in the NFL improved your life, but also has screwed up your perspective of life?
I think the biggest thing, how it helped my life, I think just the people and the opportunity that I received. This conversation with you guys, being able to travel and do things that otherwise wouldn't have been able to do. Having the opportunity to play in so many different cities, to travel and do things that people dream about. So apart from the money, I just think the experience itself was just unbelievable. The people that you got to meet, and from dignitaries, from you name it, people that are, you know, in other professions, meeting the Denzel Washington, meeting Denzel, coming to a game, you know, meeting, you know, presidents and presidents' wives, and doing those things because of what you've done. So the opportunity that it gave me is unreal. I think the negative would be some of the things that's going on with our bodies now, the CTE and fingers and joints and, you know, getting up in the morning and how the body feels for all the hits and things that you've taken. Also a false insecurity because you see so many different things, and sometimes you don't trust people and you see what people are about and it makes you guarded. So sometimes it tainted me in some ways too, in that process.
Lorenzo, you're a four-time Pro Bowler. You're an All-Pro. You were a member of the 2000s all-decade team at fullback. But what's the greatest gift that you got from the game of football?
I think the greatest gift that I got from the game of football, I think it's where I'm at now, to be able to have respect, to be able to be in a position now to tell people your story and help more individuals because of your position. It's given me the ability and also the gravitas to be able to tell people my story, but also introduce more people to a better life, introduce more people to Christ. I think that's what one of the things that we have a platform, and we're able to do things that people wish that they can do. How are we losing it? I can give life or I can give death. And I've given plenty of death, guys. I've given plenty of death. I've wronged a lot of people, showed people the wrong ways. I've taken from people. And you know, two wrongs don't make a right. But because of the position that I'm in, as far as women and different things that you are allowed and afforded to. So just like I've given death, I think we have a huge opportunity to give life. So that's what it's given me, the opportunity to be able to speak life and help people in a place that they feel that they have no hope.
What's one of the pieces of advice you give your children that you hope stays with them throughout their lives?
Yeah. Advice that I try to talk to my kids about. And I talked about CDC. Choices, decisions, and consequences. You're going to have a choice. Then you're going to say, you have a choice. Can I go to school? Then you have a decision. Did or did I not go to school? You have a choice. Then you decide, did you go to school? The consequence, I went to school, graduated, did all those things. Consequence, I got a great job because I got a degree. And that's my consequence. If I don't, where is my life? Where am I going to be? How am I going to get by? CDC, choices, decisions, and consequences.
You're 8 years older than me. But man, I feel like I'm talking to a 60-year-old OG that just
full of knowledge.
And you're basically saying, look here, knucklehead.
Yeah.
I've lived this life. I've bumped my head. I've ridden on that skateboard. There's a rock right there on 8th when you hit a left over Pookie House. There's a rock.
Come on.
And you're telling us wear your mouthpiece or wear your helmet, because when you hit that rock, you're gonna fall off. Don't do what I did. I really appreciate your vulnerability and just your transparency, man. It's been awesome.
We've done quite a few of these podcasts. This is one I can honestly say I got more out of what I'm saying? Like
the unedited version in my phone. I don't, because there's so much that's gonna go on the cutting room floor.
Oh yeah, I get what you're saying. But for sure, man. Even and from Smitty's comments to you, Lorenzo, man. Like you gave us a lot, brother. So definitely appreciate that.
Steve, man, we got to do a better job, man. Just connecting, being present to each other's life, man. Because man, think about it. Another, you say 8 years old, 8 years older than you, add eight, you know, add another 42 to your, you know, add another 43 or 42 years. How old are you going to be, bro? Think about where life's at, bro.
I know.
We, you know, all of us got to do a better job. Just the people that we really want in our life and, you know, that we want to grow with and help men and do those things, man, I'm down for it, brother. We're talking about change. I know this country, man, you know, the sphere of influence we can have, how many multimillionaires we know and brothers are. But we got to help our own communities too, man. We all need to do something, man. And so many people respect you, me, man. I want to do something. I tell my son, Lorenzo, I said, he's all, dad, you know what the police was meant for. I know it was for segregation. I know it was for black. I know all those things, son, but what are we doing? Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, Steve, man. We get brothers together, man, we can change communities, man, but it's going to take us brothers to do some of this stuff too.
How would you use a failure like dropping a pass to motivate you to succeed in the next game or even the next play rather than beating yourself up?
I would beat myself up. a lot. I wouldn't necessarily use it as motivation. I would look at the data and look at my film, see why, how, what, when, where. Also go back, you know, psychologically, mentally, and see where I was. Look at the sequence of the game, why it happened, what had transpired before that. And then also go back and look at practice. So it'll be a lot of buildup to it to be able to look at it completely as data and not as emotional and saying all that professionally. I would still just analyze myself and just be pissed off and really just not liking the outcome of dropping a pass. You are a unique person. You are well worth it. You are competent. And most of all, you're lovable. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut To It. Cut To It with Steve Smith Sr. That is me. Is a production of Cut To It LLC, Balto Creative Media, The Black Effect, and iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From Cut To It, executive producer Steve Smith Sr., co-host Gerard Littlejohn, talent and booking manager Joe Fushi, social media team Wesley Robinson and John Cho. From Balto Creative Media, Cut To It is produced by Brian Baltashevich and Meredith Carter, with production assistance by Alex Lebrecht. Production manager Sarah Pollock. Theme music by Alex Johnson. Lyrics and vocals by Anthony Hamilton.
You ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know.
Cause you know it's on.
It's on.